Hey, good morning. This morning we're going to do a couple of interesting pieces on Parshas Naso. So one area of particular interest in this week's Parsha is actually the connection that seems to exist between an Isha Sota and a Nazir. They fall out in direct succession of one another. And basically what happens is that the Torah segues from a wayward wife discussing an Isha Sota, and then it kind of, in contradistinction, goes completely to the other side and speaks about complete and total abstention from certain worldly pleasures, and specifically dealing with a Nazir and Nazirus. Rashi immediately notices this interesting connection and seeks to address it. And Rashi says, on the words, Ki afli lindor neder, meaning when a man or a woman who wants to become a Nazir, who shall disassociate himself and take a neder. So Rashi says, Yafrish, that they separate themselves. And then Rashi asks the question, Lama nismacha parshas Nazir la parshas Sota? Why was Parshas Nazir put right next to Parshas Sota? What's the connection between them? Lomar Lecha, so it'll come to teach you, Shekol HaRoa Sota BeKilkula, anyone who sees a Sota in her disgrace, standing in front of the Kohen with her hair uncovered and her hair unbraided, and just a completely disgraceful situation, Yazir Atzmo Minayayin. So they will distance themselves and guard themselves from drinking wine, from becoming inebriated. Rashi quotes the Gemara in Sota with this phrase is from the Gemara in Sota. So Rashi clearly suggests, based on this Gemara, that when one sees what happens when a person loses all self-control and breaks the intimate bond between husband and wife, that they will refrain from drinking. So the question that I'd like to explore for a minute is as follows. Number one, what's the reason for being a Nazir to begin with? Number two, is it simply to refrain from drinking? Number three, is drinking such a bad thing? Obviously, the topic of my share is not to endorse inebriation. It's not to talk about how great drinking is. But clearly, the question begs to be asked. I mean, Rashi seems to suggest that drinking does have, is a negative in this. I mean, you're going to guard yourself from drinking wine. So the problem is, the question, I guess, is further exacerbated by the fact that David HaMelech writes in Tehillim, in Perakuf Dalid, that when we talk about how great Hashem is, that Hashem causes vegetation to grow so that we can make bread. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu talks about, and David HaMelech talks about all these great things that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does, he also refers to the fact HaKadosh Baruch Hu has vineyards that grow, because, and that's a good thing, because Yayin Yismach Levav Enosh, wine gladdens the heart of man. So, if you ask me, I would argue that this is a quite impressive accolade of wine. In Shoftim, we also have a very interesting dynamic that plays out. When the Malach Hashem comes to the wife of Manoach, the mother of Shimshon, so he goes through a whole list of things that she has to refrain from and things that Shimshon will have to refrain from. And listen carefully. Vayera Malach Hashem ela Isha, and the Malach Hashem appeared to this woman, Vayomer ela, and he said to her, Hineina Adakara. Clearly, you have been barren. Velo Yalat Vaharis Vayalat Bain. And you have not been able to give birth.
V'ata hishamri na v'al tishti yayin v'shechar v'al tochli kol tamin. I'm telling you right now, do not drink wine, don't get drunk, don't eat anything that'll make you tame. Ki hina chara v'yolarat habein, because you will give birth. You will have a son. Umara lo ya'ale al rosho, ki nezir elohim ye'anar min abaten, v'hu yachel lehoshia es Yisrael miyad plishtim. He will become a Nazir, and therefore you must make sure that a razor does not come upon his head, and he is going to be a Nazir, and he's going to be the ones to save the Jewish people from the hands of the Plishtim. So, look carefully at what the Nazir, what the Malach Hashem is saying. You're going to have a child, don't drink wine. Your son, he's going to be a Nazir, and I don't want his head shaved. There's no mention of wine at all. Just the fact that the boy's head should not be shaved. So let's go back to Rashi. What's Rashi really saying? So I would like to suggest that what Rashi was alluding to on a deeper level was that wine is unique in that there is an inherent contradictory quality of wine. On the one hand, it's valued, and it could be used in karbanos, and to sanctify the holiest of days, on a Shabbos or a Yontif, at a bris. On the other hand, it can intoxicate and cause man to lose focus and relinquish self-control. It has inherent within it the properties of the sacred and the properties of the profane. Marriage has the same unique internal contradictions. At certain times, intimacy is a mitzvah of the highest level. And at other times, the same actions of intimacy are worthy of one being cut off from the Jewish people, being chayv kares. Or, prior to a commitment to one another, two individuals are permitted to others. However, after a commitment is made, they're permitted only to each other. Alas, human nature is such that self-control is a struggle for everyone in their own way. So you see inherent in both really the ability to find sacredness, and at the same time, to find profanity within both. So Rashi says, when one sees such debased behavior of an Isha Sota, of a wayward wife, where an individual gave in and channeled energy into that which is profane, as opposed to that which is sacred, it serves as a wake-up call. That those other dynamics that have inherent in them the ability for sacredness and profane, it serves as a wake-up call. But we have to ask ourselves a question. What is life all about? It isn't about following after the fleeting pleasures that are here today and gone tomorrow. Rather, it's deeper. It's about perfecting ourselves in adherence to God's words and our own character traits. And that is what Rashi is saying. When you see this type of behavior, understand that wine as well allows one to either channel their emotions to God, in which case you have made it sacred, or it can be used for other, more debased acts as well. As we know with Noach, when Noach came out of the Teva, he made a carbon, and the next situation, the next conversation talking about Noach is he plants a vineyard. And that vineyard had all the properties of Kedusha, and yet we see with his sons, it was not used for Kedusha. It was used for inappropriateness. The Nazir represents the extreme. The Nazir represents the individual who needs black and white to exist in this world. The Nazir represents the individual who is unable to synthesize the elements that they come in contact with in the world and thus shun everything. Shun worldly pleasures. And that is the way that they can exist. And that perhaps is not the paradigm of life. Thus, the Gemara quotes the Shita that the reason why a Nazir brings a Karban Chatas at the end of his tenure of being a Nazir is because of the fact that it was not ideal. That his weakness led to his inability to synthesize the world and God. But the message, I believe, is even deeper than that. Everything in this world has the potential for good and bad. And the answer is not to cut oneself off from life because it is difficult to make sense of it all. The answer is not to lock oneself up away from the realities of the world because synthesis is difficult. The answer is to learn to make sense of it. The extremes are an example of individuals that cannot appreciate the gift that God gives them. On the one hand, the Torah teaches us of a wife who totally gives in to urges and desires. And on the other hand, the Nazir, the person who abstains from the world. The goal is to find the middle of the road and to learn how to function as a member of the world and of community while at the same time not veering off of the Shvil HaZahav. And this has several implications for childbearing, for child rearing, I should say. Number one, life is not black and white. There are shades of gray. And that is an important message that we need to pass on to our children. There are always going to be variables. And so, while normative development is for children to question and to be unable to perceive the reasons why we make decisions, and life is black and white for children, and so a decision that is made is either right or wrong, and will either be perceived as a justice or an injustice, and that is the way children understand, adolescents understand life. And that is obviously one of the reasons why there is so much friction during adolescence, why there is so much argument. But adults do not perceive things as black and white. Adults perceive things as gray. And our job, our role, is to pass on to our children and explain to them that while they might perceive it as black and white, there are myriad number of variables that go into decision making. And that is an important lesson for children to learn. The second point is that nothing is good or bad. Everything is what you make of it. Wine has the potential of sanctifying the day, of sanctifying Shabbos, of sanctifying Yontif. At the same time, it has the potential of causing me to be lax in my Shmiras HaMitzvos. It causes me to lose my sense of right and wrong through intoxication, that everything is what we make of it. And that is an important lesson for children. That children have the potential, have the ability to run their lives and make decisions that impact them. But parents have the obligation to make use of those teachable moments. When a child has an opportunity to do something, parents need to be there to explain to their children, you have an opportunity for X, you have an opportunity for Y. Let's speak through and strategize how X will affect you, how Y will affect you. what X will affect in general and what Y will affect in general. It isn't just enough for children to know that everything is what they make of it, but the parents have to be able to guide them and use those as teachable moments. And the third point is the fact that we need to impress upon children that it's not just a function of everything has either good or bad, but we have the potential as humans, we have the power to make sure that something is good. That we can take a situation and make it good. That we have that power. It is a tremendous idea. And it is a very important idea that we pass on to our children. I'd like to move on to a different topic, but it's actually interesting because it kind of deals with a little bit of what we had spoken about. The Piyasesna Rebbe, obviously I quote the Piyasesna, I obviously have to learn a piece of Torah from the Piyasesna. Piyasesna Rebbe discusses the priestly blessings, and he quotes the following psukim. Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe le'mor, Hashem spoke to Moshe, Daber el Aaron, speak to Aaron ve'al banav and his sons, le'mor, saying the following, Kosav arachu es b'nei Yisrael amor lahem. You will bless the children of Israel, saying to them, Yivarecha Hashem v'yishmerecha, may Hashem bless you and may He safeguard you. Ya'er Hashem panav elecha v'yichuneka, may Hashem light His countenance for you and be gracious to you. Yisa Hashem panav elecha v'yasem l'cha shalom, and may Hashem lift His countenance to you and give you peace. V'samu es shemi abnei Yisrael, let them, meaning the Kohanim, place my name upon the children of Israel. V'ani avarachem, and I shall bless them. Piyasesna asks the following questions. Number one, why is Aaron HaKohen the one who should be blessing the Jewish people as the mouthpiece of God? Let HaKadosh Baruch Hu give them the bracha. Let HaKadosh Baruch Hu say, Yivarecha Hashem v'yishmerecha. And when it says, V'samu es shemi, let them place my name upon the Jew, upon the children of Israel. Why do they need to put my name on it? What needed to be added? What are they adding to the situation? Rashi says that when it says Avarachem, when it says I shall bless them, it means to say that Hashem will give the Kohanim His stamp of approval. You guys act as my mouthpiece, and I'll give you the stamp of approval. We discussed last week a beautiful vort from Rav Kook. And I want to go back to that question and give a different answer. Tosos in the Gemara in Shabbos asks, why was the Kodesh Baruch Hu kafa aleihem har kegigis? Why did the Kodesh Baruch Hu hold the mountain over the heads of the Jewish people if they had already said Naaseh v'nishma? So last week we gave the answer from Rav Kook. There Rav Kook said the reason why was because when they said Naaseh v'nishma, they were being mekabel omochu shemayim now. Kodesh Baruch Hu's kafa aleihem har kegigis, so that they would be mekabel omochu shemayim and the Torah la'asid lavo. But Tosos gives a different answer. Tosos answers that the reason why Kodesh Baruch Hu was kaf aleihem har kegigis is because of the fact that maybe, the Jewish people would be so afraid of the fact that the Torah was given with fire, and they'll renege. They'll renege on their commitment. So the solution, really, Piyasesna says, would be very simple. Hold the mountain over their heads before saying Naaseh v'nishma. And essentially, it would make more sense for them to not accept the Torah then than not accept the Torah after they said Naaseh v'nishma, after the Torah was held over them and they accepted everything, and after they gave their word just because they saw fire. Piyasesna says as follows. At Matan Torah, due to the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence was mamish shore on them, it was mamish hovering over them, in such close proximity, there was no room for imperfection, and thus the inherent spiritual flaws that each person has due to the chet of Adam and Chava, when they ate from the Eitz Hadas Tov V'ra, it was removed. There was no room for physical imperfection or spiritual imperfection. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was too close. It would be a contradiction in terms for there to be imperfection in such close proximity to the ultimate perfection, namely HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So before that point, when the Jews said Nasa V'Nishma, it was still very much part of each individual person, the chait. And so it could not be 100% wholehearted. So it was only when they were at the most highest level of perfection were they able to accept the Torah with the fear of certain death literally hanging over their heads. Pisesna quotes the Tana Devei Elio that says that the Torah was indeed given for the sake of the Jewish people. He says, what does that mean? What does it mean that the Torah was given for the Jewish people? So it really means that by observing the mitzvos alone, one does not fulfill their chiyuv. Rather, one is makayim the mitzvah only when the actual Maisa HaMitzvah transforms the person into a Jew. That the Maisa HaMitzvah needs to transform an individual into a Jew. It isn't just enough to perform a mitzvah for the sake of performing the mitzvah. But the mitzvah needs to transform us. And that is the reason why HaKadosh Baruch Hu said that we need to be a Mamleches Kohanim V'Goy Kadosh. A kingdom of priests and a nation and a holy nation. Meaning that one's entire self on the deepest level is given over to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Choza of Lublin gives the following piece of advice. The following Eitza based on the Maggid of Mezrich that actually fits in beautifully with what I just said before. When a person, before they daven, looks to arouse themselves, so to speak, with a burning love for God, they should focus on the love that already exists within them for their children, for their spouses, for possessions. And at that juncture, when they think about how much they love those things, they should immediately think of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They should immediately channel their thoughts to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This teaches us that even the most mundane things, such as jewelry, can be elevated to the highest and holiest levels and channeled into actual love of God. By the way, we see this also when Yosef HaTzadik sees Yaakov Avinu for the first time in over 20 years. So when Yaakov sees Yosef, what happens? He sees him. And what would be the first thing that a person does after not seeing their long-lost child for so many years? To hug them and kiss them. That's not what Yaakov Avinu does. Rashi says, Yaakov Avinu says Shema. What's Psha? What do you mean Yaakov Avinu says Shema? That's not normal. That's not the normal response for a father. So the Maggid of Mezrich says, this on the deepest level is the yesod of coming close to Kadosh Baruch Hu. That I take all of my emotions that have filled me for the past 20 plus years, every ounce of love and longing for my son, and what do? I channel it towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I channel it towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's what the Pesachna says here, based on the Chozeh, who actually quotes from the Magid. Look to arouse ourselves with a burning love for God by way of those things which are tangible. Now let's tie it all together. The Gemara in Brachos has an interesting anecdote that the Divrei Elimelech, who is the father of the Pesachna, talks about. It says as follows. That when HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe Rabbeinu to tell the Jewish people that they should claim the gold and silver, HaKadosh Baruch Hu actually is mefarid and says, go tell the Jewish people to take these riches from the Mitzrim. Take it from the Mitzrim. Why? So that Avram Avinu won't complain about the promise that I made that the Jewish people would leave their slavery, berechush gadol, with many, many possessions. Divrei Elimelech asks the question that we're probably all thinking. And if Avraham wouldn't complain to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu wouldn't have kept his promise? HaKadosh Baruch Hu made a haftacha that the Jewish people will leave berechush gadol. So what, it's totally on how Avram Avinu reacts? If Avram Avinu complains, then I'll react one way. If Avram Avinu doesn't complain, then I'm not going to keep my promise? Give me a break. So the Pesachna says, what's Pshat in Rechush Gadol? Rechush Gadol could have been justified as a wealth in other forms as well. But that was not the initial meaning that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave with the original Haftacha to Avram Avinu. And so he asked that the original intention be kept. And that is the reason why Aaron HaKohen is asked to give the Bracha. And that is the reason why it is so necessary for it to be given through the Kohanim. That the bracha that the Jewish people needed to be grounded in this world, it needed to be real, it needed to be tangible, it needed to be concrete. It couldn't just be that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was blessing us on a spiritual level. But rather, it needed to be a physical level. When it comes to promising things to our children, when it comes to giving things over to our children, it must be age-appropriate. It must be of interest to our children. Everybody wants to have those sophisticated chats with their kids, but children may just want to act like kids. Sometimes they want to read. Sometimes they want to play. It's essential that children be allowed to be children. The old Victorian mantra that children should be seen but not heard, that is not the Jewish way. That is not the Jewish way. Children should be children, and we should embrace that. Now, that's not to say that we shouldn't hold our children up to a higher standard and raise the bar for them, so that they could strive to achieve the highest levels of success. But it does mean that there are age-specific expectations, and we do not do a service to our children by expecting more from them than what they are able to give. And parents need to be cognizant of this. That there's a time and a place for everything. There's a time and a place for having those conversations with our children. There's a time and a place for having our children act like children. And it's okay. It's okay for kids to act like kids. We need to embrace that. We need to embrace that behavior with our children. And again, let them be clear on the expectations that we have as parents. Let them be clear on the fact that we do expect them to reach a certain level of maturity, but allow for that progression in an appropriate way. The worst thing a parent could do is have a child be more than what they are supposed to be at this point. More than where they are supposed to be progressing. Both with their inherent, unique characteristics as an individual, and also what is appropriate just socially and cognitively in terms of general development for children. Because all that happens is you create an awkwardness, you create a gap between maturity level, and children start to think about or understand things, ideas that are not necessarily appropriate at that age. I'm not talking about inappropriate things. I'm talking about just general behavior. Children need to act like children. Parents need to embrace that. And it needs to be appropriate at the appropriate times. My mother always used to say, what's cute at 3 is not what's cute at 5. But what's cute at 3 is cute at 3, and what's cute at 5 is cute at 5. And children need to know that. But anyway, that is two ideas that I just wanted to focus on. I think very, very important ideas in this week's Parsha. Beautiful Parsha, rich Parsha, very, very deep Parsha. Next week, I think we're going to be learning, we're going to be doing this on Thursday, because I'm actually going to be away taking my 8th graders on a trip to Washington. So I look forward to seeing everybody then, and have a wonderful Shabbos. Thank you, everybody, for coming.